Do you have a message for your mother?
Yes. Tell her I feel fine. Live long and prosper, father.
Live long and prosper, my son.
Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge...
This is Tyler Orton reporting for duty.
And now for this week's conundrum, Star Trek's daddy issues.
Cam, Star Trek has a history of this, does it not?
A long, illustrious history.
Well, what do we mean by daddy issues, though? Well, just for the average listener that might not be aware of this particular trope, what is it exactly?
It's a common theme in movies and TV about characters plagued by their relationships with their fathers.
And essentially, it's almost like an easy fallback for a lot of writers, like, okay, well, let's give them some internal strife.
Yes.
I know. Parental issues.
Exactly. And then they can externalize it in a special episode where the father comes back.
Yes.
Yeah.
And essentially, yeah, exactly. We see this all the time in Star Trek. They're in the transporter room and their parents there, and there's all this grief that they have to put up with throughout the episode.
Yes. Doing research for this episode, I encountered that scenario a lot.
Well, you know what? Let's just jump right into it. I think we'll start with Enterprise. Maybe you found this observation here, but there's not as much daddy issue, not as many daddy issues here.
No, it's kind of like they learned their lesson after like four other series.
Yeah.
And we're like, you know what? Let's tone that down.
You say that, although let's take a look at Broken Bow, where the episode starts with Archer and his daddy on a beach playing with that drone.
Right, yes.
But, you know, I think you could say that Archer actually had a good relationship with his father.
Yeah, the only real thing with their relationship is that his father got very ill.
Yeah.
And, well, he was away. But, I mean... You know, it's not like he's tormented. Like, it's not like the series tracks Archer's tormented relationship with his father while he's away. Or
Henry Archer wasn't a man disappointed with how his son turned out.
No, and he was a pretty great guy himself. He was the primary developer of the first warp engine capable of warp 5.
There you
That's
go.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I think he was buddies with Zeph from Cochrane, too.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it was more like, do you think there was any... I mean, the show never really picked up on this too much. Do you think one of the themes was Archer trying to live up to his father at all?
Sure.
Maybe in the pilot that was the intention, but it never really paid off?
Yeah. Well, you know what? Let's get into it like here with maybe somebody who did have a little bit of father issues. I think you could argue the one and only standalone episodes for one Travis Mayweather.
He's the one who has the most of any of them.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. His father wanted him to stick around on those freighters and ship cargo.
Yes.
Instead, he disappoints his dad and joins Starfleet. Maybe that's a frequent theme that comes up.
It is
up.
An extremely frequent thing, in that all of these fathers are really upset their kids are joining Starfleet. Isn't Starfleet like held in high regard?
Yes, it seems as if you're a complete loser if you don't join Starfleet.
Yeah, it's like every character on the show, you know, we always hear like Starfleet is like the be-all, end-all.
Yeah.
But there's all these fathers who are really angry their kids are joining Starfleet.
I'd completely forgotten about Travis's issues with his dad.
No, you forgot about Travis.
That's true. But we went and saw Star Trek The Ultimate Voyage. That was the live symphony, and we were subject to an 8-minute clip from Fortunate Son. We get to watch Travis bawl his eyes out for about 8 minutes.
Yeah.
It was awkward.
Yeah, and I mean, he didn't even really speak to his father when he joined Enterprise, and his father died while he was away.
Yeah.
So it's, like, pretty depressing, and it's like, really? This is what the big conflict was over? Like, being a freighter captain versus, like... Starfleet exploring the galaxy?
Yeah. Is it that really big of an issue? I don't know. I think the other characters have worse relationships.
Do you think the father was jealous that Travis was going to be better than him?
Yes. He had a petty old man.
Yeah.
All right. Well, very quickly, let's run through the other characters. T'Pol, she had more mommy issues, I would say.
Which, wait for next Mother's Day, I guess,
sure,
for that
yes,
episode.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Malcolm Reed. Well, we found out that his mom and dad had no idea what he liked to eat.
Right.
That's about it there. I guess, no, his dad wanted him to join the Navy.
Yeah, his he had a long line of family members that were in the Navy.
So he disappointed them by joining Starfleet.
Yeah, I don't really even think there was disappointment. It was just like, yep, yeah, they were all Navy, but I went to the Starfleet.
Considering all the polygamy going on in the Denobulan homeworlds, did Phlox have many father issues? And I mean many fathers, not many issues.
None that were referenced, unfortunately. Yeah. That would have made for an interesting episode.
What about Hoshi? I don't recall anything.
No.
About
no.
her character. At all.
No, I mean, Trip, you know, his dad wanted him to be an engineer.
Yeah.
And then he went to Starfleet. I mean, it was pretty minor deal. So really, I think Mayweather is the only issue, and I thought it would be fun in this episode for us to kind of play Junior Deanna Troyes.
Yes.
So I'm putting my black contacts right now.
You're going to be the child.
We're all the child.
Yes.
And I thought it would be fun to kind of like decide, you know, who ultimately is, you know, kind of responsible for the conflict. Is it the father? Is it the son? Or is it both?
Right.
And I think in some of these cases, you know, it's both. But what do you think for Mayweather?
I think his dad's being kind of petty here. His son, like, why would you not want to provide support for your son's dreams?
Well, I don't. A lot of fathers in Star Trek don't want to do that.
That's true. But why would, essentially, like, Travis grew up in a family of truckers.
Yes.
Wouldn't you rather your son be less of a trucker, more of an explorer?
I would say yes, but I guess it depends. Because, you know, there's always those kind of small town people that are like, you'll never leave the small town.
What's eating Travis Mayweather? But,
Who's the Leonardo DiCaprio in this situation?
Oh, God. I'll let you answer that one, Cam.
I don't have an answer.
Okay. Who's Mama?
Is B4 in this?
Okay. So, yes, I think his father is to blame in this
situation. Yeah, I blame the father, too, because, you know, there's the episode Horizon where he goes back and his brother is running the ship.
Yeah.
And his brother's a jerk to him, too.
Yeah. Kind of, I can imagine why Travis wanted to leave this ship.
It's kind of the whole family that's resentful at the, like, the one of, the, you know, the brother/son for making good.
Yeah.
It's
screw them.
Yeah, it's petty. He's better off.
Yes, okay.
He's better off not being acknowledged as a member of the crew.
Well, we've decided that as our Junior Deanna Troyes duties for this particular franchise. Let's move on, because I think there's maybe more ripe discussion in the original series.
There couldn't be any less. So let's jump to the 23rd century in the original series.
Yeah.
Now, Kirk, not so much. Kirk, that would be an addition later on into the J.J. Abrams.
Right.
So maybe let's kind of go through the rest of the cast and get back to Kirk.
Okay.
So we get to Spock.
Oh, boy.
The original daddy issues guy.
Yeah, his father doesn't even want Spock to guide him on a tour of the ship.
Yes.
That's how bad it is.
Yes.
So what do you think about his mom, though? At least she is like a support network for Spock. But how do you think it affects Spock himself? He's a man without emotions.
Right.
So I don't know. Do you think Spock is fazed by this at all? I think he has to be.
It has to be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in that episode, Journey to Babel, I mean, Spock doesn't seem happy.
No, he's very put upon.
Yeah, like, I mean, you know, when we get to, like, the Tuvok era of Vulcans, they just seem bored all the time.
Yes.
But, like, Spock emotes, you know, even though he's not an emotional being. Like, you really do pick up that sort of almost emo sense. Like, Spock is very kind of moody.
Yeah, and
but just, like, Nimoy does it all with his eyes, and he's so damn good.
But what do you think about the fact that, okay, let's get down to the core division between them. It's the fact that Spock went off to Starfleet.
Right, again.
And instead of going to Vulcan Science Academy.
Right.
Could you imagine that being a good reason for a father and son to break off the relationship? Because he's the first Vulcan to decline entry into Vulcan Science Academy. That perhaps brings some shame to the family.
Yeah, like, I understand Sarek's reason for being hurt. Like, Vulcans are very logical, which makes them incredibly stubborn.
Yes.
So in his mind, like...
human element.
Yes. Yeah. Well, true. But the Science Academy is kind of the be-all, end-all.
Yeah.
And for him to walk away from that, I think it, even though they wouldn't say they would take insult, I think it does kind of insult the father in a sense.
No, absolutely. Because, Cam, they would say it's illogical for him not to pursue you know, that seat in the Academy there.
Right.
So, yeah, I can understand why they're both, you know, bothered by each other.
Now, one other thing about Vulcans is they say, you know, like, they wouldn't have, say, pride.
Yeah.
Do you think Sarek has a certain amount of pride, though? Like, I don't know. Like, I feel like so much of this conflict kind of involves pride.
Well, think about it. He is a very...
prominent Vulcan.
He jumps into things full force. Of course, he married a human.
Yeah.
Because he's an ambassador. He's like, it's only logical that I do that.
Yeah.
He raises a half-Vulcan, half-human son. Mm-hmm. He's going all in on it. So does he have pride because of that? I think he takes himself very seriously.
Right.
Maybe more so than the average Vulcan. Right. Would you say that that's the case?
I would say so.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's the scene in Star Trek V where they're, you remember when they're going through the hallucinations and Cybok's giving them?
Yeah.
And Spock sees his birth, and his father looks at him and says he looks so human. And he says it kind of, you know, like, insultingly.
It's very much like the Penguin.
Yes.
From Batman Returns.
And he throws him off a bridge into the river.
And then, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what do you think? Okay, who would have bigger daddy issues at this point, Spock or Cybok?
Oh, boy.
Well, because I don't think Sarek would necessarily approve of Cybok.
Sarek didn't even mention Cybok through most of Star Trek. So, yeah.
Well, okay, so this is our, if we look at Journey to Babel, this is our first meeting with Sarek.
Yeah.
How do you think their relationship develops over the course of, like, the films?
Well, it's...
It seems far less chilly.
Yeah, yeah. Like, to me, it almost feels like in Journey to Babel, it's very tense, and you get a lot of, you know, the emotional drama behind the relationship. The movies, none of that's there.
Yeah.
It's all just, you know, Sarek will show up, you know, greet himself as the father of Spock, help them with their whatever information they need, and kind of make his way off the scene. And then you cut back to, like, Unification 2 and whatever.
I was going to bring that up, yeah.
And suddenly it's about, you know, Picard having to communicate to Spock, you know, Sarek's feelings for him and things like that. So...
do you think there is some resolution by Unification?
I think so.
Yeah.
And I've had a realization as I was watching Journey to Babel, actually, that amused me in that Sarek is never on the Star Trek TV show where he's healthy.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
He is sick in all three TV appearances.
Well, that's the other trope. Elderly people have health concerns, chronic health concerns.
He's only healthy in the movies.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right, because in the Next Gen episode titled Sarek, he's got the dementia going on, and then he actually dies in Unification.
Yes.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and here he needs that transfusion.
Yes.
He's having Vulcan heart attacks.
Yes.
So,
but I do love the scene at the end of Journey to Babel where him and Spock are in the recovery room, and Spock's mom, Amanda, is just like getting really annoyed at the two of them for being so logical.
Yes.
And you can see that moment, like the connection between the two of them is that they do think alike. Like, they are kind of very father and son.
Well, Cam, what do you think life is like for Amanda living in that household with
horrific
Spock and Sarek? Yes.
Horrific.
But just as a human, like, yeah. That she must be somebody with, I don't know, quite the stamina when it comes to dealing with just, like, frustration.
Who do you think Amanda talks to?
She must have a really good subspace line to her, like, maybe her sister back on Earth or something
she
like that.
She must, because, I mean, any Vulcan, you know, from the planet Vulcan is going to look at her like she's just nuts.
Yeah.
Like, it would be like, you know, this is all logical, why would you be saying these things?
Although, you know, she must... she must have some affinity for Vulcans if she agrees to marry one.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we don't see it in the Journey to Babel. I'm trying to think. I think she was a little more so when you get to, like, Star Trek III. She seemed, like, more Vulcan-ish. Or even, like, Winona Ryder in the Star Trek 2009. Like, it looked like she'd very much adopted, like, the Vulcan way of life.
Well, certainly with her clothing, even in this episode, Journey to Babel. But, yeah. Okay, well, let's move on. Next characters in TOS.
Well, we got to go to McCoy.
Yep.
McCoy, again, in the series, you don't really get a lot, but in Star Trek V, we get the big scene of him euthanizing his father.
Should it be called Star Trek V Daddy Issues? Is that a better subtitle?
Yeah, that's not a bad one.
Yeah, and then, of course, McCoy finds out a few short months later. What happens, Cam, after he euthanizes his own father?
I don't remember.
There's a cure, wasn't there?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
So... I watched Star Trek V about 3 times ahead of this episode as research, so that's why it was on top of my mind. Anyway.
So, I mean, again, this isn't an issue that plagues McCoy.
Yeah.
It is interesting that it is... The thing about McCoy is you don't get a lot brought up on throughout the series about his character, other than, like, he has a daughter that he doesn't really talk to very much. But it's generally Spock that is, within the series, the one who goes through the most kind of emotional, traumatic sort of storytelling. Kirk in the movies gets a lot of it.
Yep.
McCoy, you really get very little. But this is kind of his big moment, really, in Star Trek V.
And, you know, it's actually, I know fans disparage Star Trek V a lot.
Yeah.
But Cam, you and I, we went over that particular film in a podcast maybe a year ago.
Right.
There's actually a lot to like in that. And there's a lot of good character moments. I mean, the movie does get really stupid by the time we get to the giant head. Yes. But I encourage people to go back, rewatch it with an open mind.
Yeah.
It's all right.
It's one of those movies that, like, a lot of Trek fans are just like, it's a total piece of crap.
No, yeah, I know.
Where I'm like, it contributes a lot of character stuff.
Yeah.
It has solid Trek ideas.
It's much more in the spirit of the original series. I think more so than any other original series film.
You could argue with for Star Trek IV.
Yeah.
I think that one is pretty Star Trek-y.
But not every Star Trek film was about going back in time to the 1980s.
No.
That's all. Yeah, you know. This one felt more like a typical episode to me.
Right.
Whereas, I mean, but that's the other problem that Star Trek has, is like it's often accused of just being like, oh, this is just a two-part episode.
Yeah.
At least the next-gen films.
Right.
All right, well, after McCoy...
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing really else to report.
Yeah, I can't think of anything. So
that would imply the other characters got character development.
Should we jump right into Kirk?
Well, yeah, let's jump to Kirk, because, in the original series, you don't get much.
He has more brother issues, I suppose.
Well, his brother dies in the episode Operation Annihilate, but he doesn't seem to really care.
Yeah.
You know, and there's, like, I can't remember if it was a later episode or one of the movies where he talked about Spock. He's like, my brother has died. It's like, you mean two of your brothers have died. So he didn't really care too much about his brother. But when you get to the 2009 film, J.J. Abrams, he's done that a couple times in these franchise kind of relaunches now. He's really brought in the daddy issues big time.
J.J. Abrams, he was really only involved with maybe the pilot in the first couple episodes of Lost.
Yeah.
That is a show all about daddy issues. If you thought Star Trek was bad, go watch Lost. But
and
of course,
I'm thinking Kylo Ren.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, and granddaddy issues, too.
Yes.
Kylo Ren, of course. But yeah, J.J. Abrams, he definitely brings that in. But, I mean, I'm not going to complain because, Cam, you've mentioned it before, that whole USS Kelvin scene was one of the best pieces of filmmaking I think J.J. Abrams has ever done. Like, that's just one of the best sequences in Star Trek, period.
Yeah, I agree.
So I think it's worth it there. Mm-hmm. But you brought this up because, Cam, I was just recently listening to our episodes looking at the new Star Trek Beyond trailer.
Oh, yeah.
You brought up, you know, how that trailer opens with Kirk, played by Chris Pine, lamenting over his own father issues once again. This is a guy who never knew his dad.
Right.
He's essentially... Kirk was born in a shuttle as the USS Kelvin was blowing up.
Yeah.
So he essentially had, like, stepdaddy issues, I suppose.
Well, he didn't get along with his stepfather in the 2009 film because he was stealing his car and driving into the quarry or whatever.
I think the stepfather is in the right in this particular instance here, but...
hold on now.
Okay, okay.
But it's, you know, since that, you know, the timeline shift and all that, where Kirk's father dies and, you know, saving the Kelvin, a lot of these films, especially 2009, it looks like the new one, are about Kirk having to kind of follow in his father's footsteps.
Right.
And his father is this great hero to Starfleet. Can he ever measure up?
Well, Kirk already passed his father in the ranks, like his lieutenant, Kirk, and he ended up becoming a captain for, what did Pike say, like 3 minutes?
Something like that, yeah.
Kirk's been doing this for, oh gosh, going on 7 years by this point.
Would you say, I'm trying to think, in these past two films, has Kirk done anything, do you think, as heroic as his father did?
Well, he did have that threesome with those twins. That's what you're getting at, Cameron. But beyond that, he died.
Yeah,
he was revived.
Well,
by
you know what? I guess it is pretty good. Actually, he does save the ship.
Yeah,
and he does actually. Yeah, he kills. I guess you know what? Maybe he did kind of the same thing.
Yeah, So there you go.
Sure, okay, yes.
He should be okay by then.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, yeah. Okay, let's play Junior Deanna Troi. Who's in the wrong here? Kirk's dead father or Kirk?
Kirk's dead father. Yeah. Very much so.
I agree.
No, I think Kirk is at fault just because there's so much inadequacy issues.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a little bit on him, I think.
Well, you know, let's touch upon this. Let's go back to TOS film era Kirk.
Okay.
Because there are daddy issues he's involved with just on the other side with one David Marcus.
Right.
And the thing is, neither one of them really knew that they were father-son until Star Trek II. That revelation happens, and I don't know, David's kind of whiny, but then he gets stabbed to death.
Yeah. But I would say David's the resentful one in that equation.
Like, yeah.
Kirk is more than open to him.
Yeah.
It's David that's very pissed off about him. So,
well, let's play Junior Deanna Troi. Who's okay. in the wrong there, David or Kirk?
Oh, God. Is David wrong?
I'd say Carol Marcus was kind of wrong to never... Yeah. Look, I honestly, I think it's kind of not... For the sake of her own son, mm-hmm. and I think it just...
And Kirk, too.
And Kirk, too, you know, like, I think maybe she should have, like, kind of broached the subject with Kirk at a certain point, being mm-hmm. like, hey, look... Even if I don't necessarily want you involved with this kid's life, I want to raise him on my own. I just want you to know.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I agree.
So, okay, we're going to blame a woman here for daddy issues. That's, you know, that's what happens when you get two guys to co-host
this is a low
Star Trek show.
We need Jarrah here. So what about Spock?
Okay. I honestly, my gut instinct says Sarek is to blame mostly.
I think so, too. I mean, ultimately, like... You know, you would hope there would be at least some acknowledgement that his son is kind of a trailblazer.
Yeah.
In his own way. But there isn't.
Yeah.
So I think it's Sarek in this regard. Like, I mean, I think you should always support your kids.
Yeah.
And it's not like, you know, Spock said, I want to be like a garage musician. You know, I want to play the Vulcan harp.
Yes.
You know, in bus stations. You know what I mean? Like, he went to Starfleet. He's done something very noble and, like, admirable.
Actually, if we see the opening, Spock's opening scene in Star Trek, the motion picture, it actually looks like he decided to become a rocker, you know, with his long hair and, you know. All right, okay.
And what about McCoy?
I think McCoy's to blame. He euthanized his own father. So there you go.
Okay, so let's move into a much richer source of daddy issues, which is Next Generation.
Okay, why don't we start with Riker, because I think that's an interesting one there.
Yes.
Riker grows up in a single-family household. It's his dad.
Kyle Riker.
Yeah.
Played by, Mitchell Ryan, who I will always know as the villain of Lethal Weapon.
Right, yes. Yeah. He's... getting too old for this shit.
That's right.
Raising Riker.
He, like, has a grenade thrown on him, I recall, at the end. He's, like, trapped under a car.
Oh, yeah.
Danny Glover, like, rolls a grenade under. It's like, kaboom.
Ouch.
He was also, wasn't he the guy's father on Dharma and Greg? Greg's father, I suppose?
I can't. That's quite the reach. I think it actually might be.
Well, I'm continuing the trend of us referencing 90s sitcoms.
Yeah, let's have a Blossom discussion. there's daddy issues in Blossom, too.
True.
Yeah.
A lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, this will be a bonus episode, our Blossom podcast. But okay. Well, yeah. What's the issue here between Riker and Kyle?
Right. So in the episode, The Icarus Factor, Kyle comes aboard the Enterprise, and there's a lot of resentment towards Riker. He kind of wants like Riker's sort of. He wants to like open up his relationship with his son again because Riker says like they haven't talked in 15 years.
That's a long time to go not talking to your father.
Yeah.
Essentially, didn't we do the math a while ago and we realized that Riker, by the time he graduated the academy and became first officer of the Enterprise, he'd only been in Starfleet for 7 years.
Yeah.
So I think Riker stopped talking to his dad before he was even in Starfleet.
He says he's they went parted ways when he was 15.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's a long time.
That very much is.
If I parted ways with my dad when I was 15, I wouldn't have had a car to drive. So that would have been tough.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So, a lot of it is, it seems like a lot of the show is based on competition. Carl Riker with his son.
Yeah.
And
I like the how his name is totally turned into Carl.
Did I say
Riker?
Carl? Yeah, Kyle Riker. I thought I'd said that, and I was like, no, I think I'm just going to go with Kyle.
You can tell you said it when Tyler starts mocking you.
But yes, it's like competition, but it's like really weird because there's a scene where he's talking to Troy, and Kyle starts hitting on Troy, and he's like, can't you tell we have the same taste in women? And I'm like, blah! It was disgusting. But then there's also like a romance in the past between Pulaski and Riker's father. She's like, I would have had him in a second.
He has quite the wide spectrum open when it comes to the ladies, I suppose.
Yes, and ultimately they have to settle their differences in an Anbo Itsu martial arts match. What I love about Star Trek is no matter how like disciplined and intense the martial art on Star Trek, I know I could do it better.
Oh yeah. Well, you know what, after I saw this episode, I suggested instead of typical family therapy that the Ortons do this instead. Yes. Nobody joined me.
No, it's but... like American Gladiators, but so much worse.
Yeah. Ultimately, are you invested at all in this particular father-son relationship?
No, in rewatching this episode, I was really... I watched this one right after Journey to Babel.
Yeah.
And I think one of the smartest things Journey to Babel did was it had the father-son conflict, but it had another story that was really interesting going along at the same time. This one doesn't really.
Yeah.
There is kind of a side story, but it's nowhere near as interesting. It's about, like, Worf being hit with pain sticks.
Yes.
Like, it's very much a B story. A B with a capital B.
Yeah. Now, I remember the pain sticks.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's just not that interesting. So, like, the whole episode really hinges on how invested you are in Riker's father.
Yeah.
And I just think Riker's father is so unlikable.
Yeah.
And ultimately, like, I really blame this one on his dad.
Yeah.
By a huge degree. And, they say he's been tormented by this attack by the Tholians, that he was, like, the only guy who left alive. And sure, that's terrible, but...
Go see a counselor.
Yeah.
You have a son. You have a responsibility as a father to be a good father.
Yeah.
So ultimately, if we're going to blame somebody for this relationship, would it be Kyle?
It's Kyle.
Or, I'm sorry, Carl.
Carl, Kyle, whatever.
Okay. Well, you know, you just mentioned pain sticks a second ago. Why don't we bring up one Lieutenant Worf?
Yeah.
Because I think, does he have any main stories that don't involve, the legacy of Moog?
Not many.
Yeah. I mean, look.
Alexander.
Yeah, that's true. Sergei Rozhenko, I think, embarrasses Worf a little bit.
Yeah, but I don't think he's tormented by him. Or there's no ongoing trauma.
Do you think Worf really has any memories of Moog?
No.
Yeah.
No, because what? He died when he was 6, right?
Yeah. If not even a little bit younger. But obviously, just every Worf-centric episode featuring Kronos, it's like, the legacy of your father.
Yeah.
And it's just like, okay. It's interesting going back and doing research for a lot of these episodes, especially when we're covering Worf.
Mm-hmm.
And I always thought it was kind of interesting, kind of the legacy of Moog, blah, blah, blah. But when you go back and see how much they keep hitting that same chord again and again and again, it's kind of, like, boring.
Yeah, I've complained in the past about I get really tired about Worf's honor.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I almost would have liked to have seen, like, a flashback episode about Worf's father.
Do you think that could be an anthology series?
No, I hope
Star Trek Moog?
No, please, God, no. But, I mean, I think it would have been interesting within TNG to have an episode. Like, they didn't really do diversion episodes like some of the other series. Like, you know, there's, like, that episode where Janeway tells a story about her ancestor.
Oh, 1159?
Yeah.
Yeah, or Y2K sort of stuff. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and T'Pol has the one, Carbon Creek. Carbon Creek,
yeah.
Whereas,
we do have the Lower Decks in TNG. That's really the only one I can think of, though.
But you never get any that are about the characters, like, past.
Right,
We never get to see, childlike Worf with his father at the Kittimer, massacre or anything like that. Like, you never get to see Moog. And I think it would have been interesting. I wouldn't want to see it now, but I think it would have been interesting at the time to have maybe one episode that even had flashbacks to Moog, just so, I don't know, because so much of the series is about him being traumatized by the loss of Moog, but we never know who Moog is. It's just kind of this name that gets thrown around a lot.
Yeah, I do agree. Unless, of course, Birthright Parts 1 and 2 reveal that Moog really was on that Romulan prison camp the whole time.
Yeah.
We could have gotten a view of him. Hey,
what could have been?
You know what? I'll throw this out there. What if that old Klingon that we saw there was Moog, but he was just too ashamed to admit it to Worf?
He was too ashamed to admit he was Worf's father?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Worf, he's got daddy issues. Cam, I think there's one other character that probably has the biggest daddy issues on the show. Do you know who I'm thinking of here?
Data?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got brother and daddy issues going on, but yeah. he's on this constant search because essentially, does he even have any recollections of Dr. Noonien Sung? Because essentially, the Starfleet officers assemble him after that colony is attacked, but I don't know if Data actually remembers. I think maybe his memory is wiped or something.
Yeah, I don't think he remembers. I think it's more that once he finds out he has sort of a creator slash father, that that idea very much appeals to him.
Yeah.
And he really wants to foster that sort of relationship. He wants to, I mean, Data's whole journey is about becoming more human, and what's more human than obsessing over your father?
Yes, exactly. And so, yeah, he ends up on that one planet after the doctor unleashes a homing beacon.
Yeah.
And Lore picks that up, too. And, I don't know, Lore kills his own father, so that can torment him, too.
Who do you think has more father issues, Data or Lore?
Oh, Lore for sure. Lore for sure.
He wasn't the favorite one, that's why.
Yeah. You know, that's kind of unfair of, you know, Dr. Sung to do.
Would Lore be your favorite?
No. Can you understand why he ditched B4 on a desert planet?
He doesn't even acknowledge B4.
No. Okay, but I did like, okay, I just brought up Birthright that dealt with daddy issues, but it also dealt with Data's own daddy issues as well.
Right.
We both mentioned that we really liked the dream sequence Data was going through, where mm-hmm. we see like the young Dr. Sung, you know, of course played by one Brent Spiner.
Yeah.
Do you think that helped Data with his own issues as it pertains to kind of that humanity aspect?
Well, the issue with Data is, though, I don't know if Data's ever going to get resolution.
Yeah.
He's just going to kind of compute the situation and be like, okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then maybe later down the road, and a new hint of his father will kind of pop up and draw his curiosity again.
You mean like how we discovered that his father built a android wife for himself?
Yes, that's quite true.
Why does it always come to sex with robots? And that's another sci-fi trope.
That's another episode of this podcast.
Okay. That'll be our next Valentine's Day episode.
Robot love.
Yes.
Requiem for Methuselah. Here we come.
Okay. Well, next big daddy issues. We've got like Wesley, of course, whose father died when he was young. So he really sees Picard very much as kind of this father figure. Very, well, I wouldn't say he immediately sees that, but Picard eventually becomes that.
Well, I don't know. You could say he almost does right away because he always wants his approval.
That's true.
He's always seeking Picard's approval, even when Picard's yelling at, you know, get off the bridge and all that sort of
and,
stuff.
And do you recall in Encounter at Farpoint, they really hinted at the fact that Wesley was actually Picard's son?
Yeah.
And then they completely dropped that.
Yeah, I've always found it fascinating because Roddenberry was very obsessed with the Wesley character.
Yeah.
And, you know, Will Wheaton has said, like, Gene Roddenberry was very, like, had an open-door policy with Will Wheaton. You know, he always wanted to talk to him in the office. Like, he really wanted, I think he was very, very invested in Wesley. Like, I've read that he really saw himself as, like, Wesley. You know, Wesley was, like, him as a kid, but just much brighter.
Right.
And I think it's really interesting that Wesley has these sort of father issues, because then you go, well, did Roddenberry, like, was he putting this into this character? Because God knows a lot of these other characters have father issues.
Yeah.
And, you know, Roddenberry's at that age where his health isn't great. Maybe he's feeling reflective about his whole life. But on the flip side, in the documentary Trek Nation, that's all about Rod Roddenberry working out his father issues with his father, Gene.
Yeah, well, okay. I don't want to psych 101 the Roddenberry family too much.
No.
But I'll say this. Like, Rod Roddenberry has daddy issues, which he'll acknowledge, you know, there in that documentary.
Well, it can't be easy being the son of someone like Gene Roddenberry. There's a single-minded obsession with his creation and so on and so forth.
But there's another thing where, like, Gene Roddenberry was a notorious philanderer.
Yeah.
You know, like, and if you grow up knowing that your dad cheats on your mom, or if you find that out later, there's always hints. And so the fact that Gene Roddenberry was cheating on like, Majel Barrett was his mistress at a certain point. He was cheating on his then wife with Majel Barrett.
Right.
So there's a lot of stuff, and so it makes you wonder what Gene Roddenberry's father is like if he has, like, this history of cheating in his own life. And so, again, I'm not trying to psych 101 the family too much, but that often can be kind of a generational
thing,
you know?
I just find it fascinating that Gene Roddenberry seems so interested in exploring these father issues in TNG at this point in his life, whereas his relationship with his son, according to Rod Roddenberry, was not very good at that point.
Yeah.
I just find that very interesting.
Okay, well, let's look at Troy. Again, her father died a little young.
When she was 7?
Yeah.
A lot of them have fathers that died at like 5, 6, and 7.
Yeah.
Throughout Star Trek. Or they didn't want them to go to Starfleet. Or both.
Yes. But her father was around for the death of her unbeknownst sister.
Yes, Kestra.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Played one by one Kirsten Dunst.
Right, yeah.
So I guess, but the thing is, like, it's not like this constant thread that we're talking about when it comes to Deanna Troi. It's not like she had these persistent daddy issues that the writers keep going back
to. No, I mean, she honored him by naming her child after him in The Child.
Yes. There you go. Well, let's play The Child for just a second.
Whose fault was it?
Whose fault, yeah. that was dying.
The writer's strike.
Yeah.
So let's jump to Picard.
Yes, yes.
Because he's the big one. Well, he's not the big one. I think Worf is the big one. Yeah. But, you know, Picard's the numero uno on the ship. Does Picard have issues?
Well, I do wonder, though, because you see the relationship that he has with Robert, his brother.
Yeah.
That, obviously, Picard's father did not want him to go to Starfleet. He wanted him to work on the vineyard, you know?
This is the 24th century.
Really, you don't want your son to go off and explore the universe? You want him to work in his, you know, ancestral hometown and, like, just, like, tend to the vines?
Yeah, and it says, you know, his father didn't trust technology. Like, this is the 24th century.
Yeah, you know, I can understand not wanting to use a transporter.
Yes.
But, like, come on. Like, look, if I'm sick, I'm more than happy to go to, like, the 24th century doctor and get a cure for cancer.
Yes.
So,
it's very bizarre. And obviously this rift between the two of them was carried over into his other, you know, into Picard's brother.
Yeah.
Robert,
yeah. So. Well, think about it this way. I mean, maybe it was such a horrible experience that Picard, he didn't want to really pursue a family.
Yeah.
You know, he never had kids of his own, unless, of course, you consider Bloodlines, that great season, one of the last episodes of season 7 of Star Trek The Next Generation.
I actually recall thinking that the episode was okay.
Really?
Yeah.
I can remember as a kid watching it, I thought it was kind of stinky.
I don't know, it was okay.
Like, I know.
Season 7 is so up and down, and I recall that being one of the ones I enjoyed more. It's better than the Worf and his stepbrother go camping episode.
Paul, played by one Paul
Sorvino.
Okay, but the reason the Bloodlines bothered me, though, is because, like, we find out, no, it's not your kid.
Right.
You just think it was because Damon Bach wanted to get revenge and kill him.
So, yeah, I mean, that part I kind of can dismiss. It's more the Picard Jason stuff I found quite strong.
Sure. You know,
the narrative conceit of it just all being a con, I can dismiss. It's more about the episode I appreciate more from the point of view of what it means to Picard.
Dad, Jean-Luc, Captain, I don't know what to call you. That's the good stuff you like.
So put on your psychiatrist hat and let's just go over some of these here.
Okay.
We've already talked about Riker. And I think Worf, we can agree, it's more on Worf than his dad for being massacred.
Yes.
Data, I don't know that there's any answer in this one because Data is ultimately an android.
Yeah, I think we can blame Lore for the daddy issues.
Well, he did kill him, so yeah we can blame Lore for that one. Wesley, we can't blame because father died at 5.
Yeah.
You know, again.
Oh, no, we can blame Picard for killing his dad. The Stargazer.
Well, true, yeah. So Wesley and Troy, whatever. But Picard.
I blame Picard's father because, honestly, I think every time we have a father that disapproves of their child because they decide to make a better life for themselves.
Yeah.
Like, screw you, buddy.
Yeah, I agree.
So, okay. Well,
I mean, and look how Robert turned out.
Yeah.
If his dad was anything like Robert, I'd be going to space, too.
Could you imagine Patrick Stewart sucking on those rotten grapes the way Robert did? Like,
And had he stayed, he might have died in a barn fire, too.
Yeah, that's true. Thanks a lot, Senior Picard.
Yeah, he cursed his other son to death.
Yeah, wow. And his grandson, too.
Yeah.
Okay, well, Deep Space Nine. I think this is an interesting series to jump into.
I think so, too.
Well, okay, let's just start off. Oh, I think there's one person that you have in mind, but I'm going to start off the captain here.
Okay.
Sisko, I think it's actually good that we actually see three generations that all have seemingly like good relationships with each other. We're talking about Joe Sisko, Ben Sisko, Jake Sisko.
Well, do you know what I like a lot about it is that, you know, a lot of the other series, you know, characters we didn't mention, say like Scotty or, you know, Geordi LaForge. You know, Geordi's father does show up, but it's just kind of a nothing. Like, it doesn't mean anything. Like, I like that we actually get to explore father-son to get along. It's not just kind of like a brief, like, oh, hey, there's my dad, or just not mentioned at all.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The whole, it's not treated with apathy.
Yeah, we get several episodes with Brock Peters playing Sisko's dad.
Is this the healthiest father-son relationship that we see in Star Trek?
Well, I mean, the Jake and Sisko. Yeah.
I would say Jake and Ben is probably the healthiest.
I think, you know what? I think Rom and Nog are fairly healthy. You know, there's definitely different personality types, but I think, you know, Rom loves and supports his son.
Yeah, like, Nog was the first Ferengi to join Starfleet.
Yeah.
And I could picture season one Rom being absolutely horrified by this, but by the time we get to season three, season four, and Nog goes off to Starfleet, like, his dad... Look, here's the thing. I think Nog kind of had daddy issues, because as he explained to Ben, like, my dad is just like a loser by Ferengi standards, you know?
Right.
Like, so why pursue that life for myself?
Right.
So he doesn't. But let's tackle Ben and Jake, because I think the most notable daddy episode is, of course, The Visitor. This is...
Yeah. You know, the Explorers, too, is very good.
You know, yeah, I really like Explorers. Like, that's just like, that's a nice, solid... kind of like ship and bottle sort of episode.
For those that don't remember, that's the episode where Jake and Sisko basically go solar sailing.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Jake was originally going to say, nah, you do it on your own, Pops. And then he got acceptance into that writing school in New Zealand,
right?
I think.
Yeah.
And so he's like, nah, you know what? I'll go solar sailing with my Pops if that's the case. I like that one. But The Visitor, though, I mean, this is such an easy one to go to.
Yeah.
And I think we've delved into it before, but I mean, we see how strong that relationship is, that Jake is, well, he's literally haunted by the ghost of his father coming back every couple of years. He pursues this until it kills him, essentially. Like,
I mean, I guess alternate Jake does have daddy issues.
Yeah, very much so.
You know, I would, though, too, if Sisko was my dad, because he seems great.
Yeah, just wonderful.
Implying my own father is not great. He's great, don't worry.
Yeah, if you've got a great nickname like Jayco, and you know, your dad trying to give you relationship advice as opposed to relying on Nog.
Right.
You know, I think it's great to see. And how much do you think it was Avery Brooks pushing the writers to depict this? Because I think it was very important to Avery Brooks.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
I mean, if you just hear Sirach Lofton talk at cons about his relationship with Avery Brooks, like, Avery was really pushing for them to be very crucial to Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
Not be like a, you know, the helicopter pilot that is Beverly Crusher and Wesley.
The helicopter pilot or the helicopter parent?
Helicopter parent.
Yes. Carl, the helicopter pilot. But no, absolutely. And I think it's great. And I'm serious. Like, Sirach Lofton is very close to Avery Brooks.
Yeah.
And I really don't know what Sirach Lofton's home life was, but I definitely see that Avery Brooks was this constant force in his life for those seven and a half years.
Well, he was a mentor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then the only issue that I think that we have between Joe and Benjamin, though, is that, of course, Joe eventually reveals in season seven that, you know, your mother, that's not actually your mom, Ben. Like, that, you have a different biological mom who was possessed by the prophets and then, like, took off as soon as you were born.
That'll happen.
It's science fiction.
Yeah.
So, okay. But I wanted to talk about this.
But they communicate.
Yeah.
Which a lot of these father-son pairings or father-daughter do not do.
That's true, yeah. Which is so refreshing to see. And I think, because I think the whole daddy issues theme, it's kind of makes my eye rolls after a while. That's why I want to bring up the Siskos, because it's so refreshing to see these healthy relationships, you know? And even what about the fact that Jake says, I don't want to join Starfleet. I want to pursue life as a writer.
Right.
Ben's okay with that.
Yeah.
You know, he realizes, okay, why force something on him?
Yeah.
So,
how much do you think this had to do, like, the sort of the refreshing nature of Deep Space Nine in this regard had to do with the fact they weren't kind of under the Roddenberry thumb? And I mean, Roddenberry was obviously gone when Deep Space Nine is flourishing, but just the sense that, like, Berman and his people are focusing more on Voyager and TNG.
Yeah. Well, even, like, Michael Piller, by that point, wasn't even, like, a showrunner. I think Ira Stephen Bearer was kind of like de facto showrunner, even like early seasons.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. And I think their willingness to really push beyond those typical tropes that mm-hmm. we found in Next Gen that, look, go back and listen to our early season 1, season 2 Next Gen episode. And it's that Roddenberry factor that was preventing a lot of, I think, good storytelling from going on. But anyway, yeah, okay, so let's go. Cam, I think you have somebody top of mind that you want to bring up who might have daddy issues.
Well, should we go to Bashir?
Yeah.
Okay.
I actually love this because this is very different than the other daddy issues that, of course, we encounter. Because his dad is a loser.
Yeah, he's, well, what are you talking about? He's into, what is it, like landscape architecture?
This week.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like how Bashir's like, what is it now, Mom? What is he doing now?
Yeah.
And it's interesting because his father is a charismatic guy, mm-hmm. and I think he does have some smarts.
And he's played by Brian George. He is inherently likable.
Yes.
Like, you feel bad for this character the entire episode. And this is the episode Dr. Bashir, I presume. And, you know, like, what happens is that this is the episode where Zimmerman comes and he's going to make a new medical hologram of Bashir, and he brings his parents there for interviews.
Yes.
And his parents, of course, have the secret that he was genetically altered, that they're trying to, you know, keep away from Zimmerman. But, like, the whole thing is, you know, Bashir is getting angry at his father the whole time. Well, and he's resentful for, yeah, at his father for not only doing this to him, but also being kind of a bumbling fool.
Yeah. But what do you think's the bigger issue? Being genetically engineered and realizing what a bumbling fool your dad is, or the very fact that from a very young age you kind of had to keep this secret from everybody. You had this secret thrust upon you by your family's decision to change you when you're very, very young.
Yes.
And Bashir even brought up with his parents, like, I was 6 years old. You have no idea how I could have turned out. Like, you know, and there's a reason why genetic engineering is banned in the Federation.
It's pretty heartbreaking, though, when the mom says, like, you were so far, you know, you're like, you were struggling and you were crying, you know, what have you.
Yeah.
And it's like, you understand why these parents would have maybe made this decision.
Yeah.
And especially when you're someone like his father who's kind of desperate for himself.
Yes.
And kind of failing. Like, he would not want his son to turn out like himself.
Yeah.
And so, like, I really sit, like, Brian George is so good in this episode. Like, your heart breaks for this guy because even though he's kind of just a loser, he's not, like, a mean-spirited one. Like, he's obviously someone who wants the best but just doesn't know quite how to do it.
Well, the rest of the crew likes him, too.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. But you're right. He is a loser, and he even ends up in jail by the end of this episode.
Yeah, for sure. But he finally stands up, you know, for something and is willing to take the 2-year sentence to allow his son to stay in Starfleet.
Yeah.
So, like, ultimately, he goes out kind of heroically. So I really love this episode.
I do, too. Okay, well, you know what? Speaking about likable dads that the son hates, let's go to one Dr. Maura Pell and Odo.
Right.
Because, of course, Odo's haircut... Is that why he has daddy issues at this point?
Odo has a lot of issues.
Yeah.
But the relationship with Dr. Moore, it was always really interesting to me because you can, like, I can very much sympathize with Odo's case.
Yeah, but here's the thing, like, Mora didn't know that it was a sentient life form when he was experimenting on him.
No.
Yeah.
No, but I can understand Odo's point of view, like, of being tortured. You would not be that forgiving of the person that was torturing you.
Yeah, if I had memories of my dad, like, I don't know, like...
poking and prodding
you. Electrical shocks to my system, and he's like, hey, dude, didn't know that you were sentient. You know, I'd be a little suspicious or a little bit wary of him going forward.
I like that this is kind of the opposite of the Dr. Noonien Soong relationship with Data.
Yeah.
Where it's this, you know, he's not an artificial being, but he's someone who's... He is kind of the Data character of DS9.
Yeah.
And
the one who has most trouble relating to those around him.
Yes.
Yeah.
And whereas Data very much wants sort of the approval and a relationship with his human father, Odo's not that keen on the whole thing.
No. And, well, It's very similar to like the whole Bashir and Bashir and Bashir relationship, where you have the father who's down and the son who's still very resentful. Whereas the difference between some of the other characters we're talking about is like kind of the dads are jerks.
Yeah.
Whereas these are nice fathers that did something that really, you know,
scarred the
child. You know, so understandably so. One character that I do want to bring up, and it's only worth noting because Cork, we've never encountered his father at this point, but we do know his mom. We'll go into this on Mother's Day, but I think it's worth noting he's got some mommy issues to deal with.
Oh, yeah.
And do you think that has anything to do with, because his father is mentioned.
Yeah.
And his father's a failure.
Yeah, his father was bad at finances and didn't want Quark to leave for Ingenar.
And it seemed like any success that he did have, it was actually his mom's doing. Yes. And I think Quark's kind of resentful of that.
Do you think Quark is a success? Like, is Quark his father's son?
Well, that's a good question, because, like, relative, like, capitalism skills relative to the rest of the crew, sure.
Yeah.
But compared to other Ferengi, I don't know. Cousin Gala has his own moon.
Yeah.
Quark owns a bar.
Yeah.
How many, like, really rich bar owners do you know, Cam?
Yeah. Like, I mean, Rom ultimately excels past Quark.
I would say not so much. Maybe not quite as successful. I've never been posed that question before, so it's interesting that you have me think about
it. Who else would pose that question to you?
I know. Fair enough.
Let's talk a little bit about O'Brien.
Well, a little bit.
A little bit, because O'Brien's father, Michael, hoped his son would become a cello player, and he was angry when he went to Starfleet instead of going to, like, the music academy.
Again,
it continues the trend of fathers that are angry about their sons not going to whatever they want them to do.
But I have to say, this is literally the only thing we ever hear about O'Brien's father.
Yes.
Which is kind of strange, but again, it's, like you said, it's that same trope we've had time and time again. Okay.
I mean, it's notable, but it's not a big deal.
Yeah. What about Kira's father? He
dies horribly.
Horribly, yeah. So, whose fault was that?
That's the Cardassians in that case.
Yeah. Do we ever hear anything about Jadzia's father?
No.
Yeah.
But the one thing I want to sort of say about Kira is Kira's father dies, like, calling out her name, which she is not there, and it haunts her, like, up into the present.
Yeah.
Because she was out on a revenge mission instead.
That's true.
So, you know, Kira, I mean, I don't know that this really... I think Kira has a lot of things that tormented her throughout her life. Yeah. I don't think this was the sole thing, but I do think this stuck with her.
Well, I can't wait until next Mother's Day when we jump into Kira's own mommy issues, because those are quite significant.
They are very significant, and they tie into the father, too.
Yeah. Okay, well, Ezri, we get to meet her mom and her brother, but I don't know, did we even hear much about her dad?
No, not really.
Okay. We've already covered Worf. Is really anybody left to...
No.
Check in on Deep Space Nine?
No, so it's time for the therapist session.
Okay.
So we talked about Sisko. They're all good.
They're all good, yeah.
Kira, again, the Cardassians are to blame for that one. Bashir.
I blame Richard Bashir.
Do you?
Yes.
Yeah.
I know, like, Julian seems a little whiny, but I think it's only because Richard is so likable, you know? But he literally got genetic enhancements on his son. Whose fault is that? It's not 6-year-old Bashir.
No, it's a lot of responsibility to put on a kid.
Yeah.
So yes, I agree with that one. But I will say, like, you know, Bashir seems like so unlikable in the episode because he's always snapping at this poor man.
Yeah.
And you feel so bad for the guy. But you have to also imagine that he's had this guy around his whole life. We only see him for an hour.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Okay.
So let's jump to O'Brien.
I blame, again, Michael O'Brien.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Odo?
Oh, this one's tough.
It's a little tough, guys. I think
this might be shared.
Yeah, I think it's shared.
I think it's both sides
are
at fault for this scenario.
Okay. Whose fault is it that Quark's dad sucked at business? Quark's dad? Or Quark?
Or the Ferengi school system.
There you go. Yeah. Okay.
So, okay, let's jump over to, lastly, to Voyager. got a few in Voyager.
Yeah, let's start. Okay, can we start with Tom Paris?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, because again, we actually see two different actors play you know,
Owen Paris.
Admiral Paris.
Yeah.
And all we hear from Tom leading up to it is like how much he kind of resents his own father. Yeah. Look, he got washed out of Starfleet, joined the Maquis,
yeah.
gets arrested on his first mission.
Yeah.
He's a disgrace to his dad, essentially. It seems as if like his primary motivation is trying to repair his own reputation by mm-hmm. serving on this mission with Voyager.
Right.
So, I don't know. Have you gotten to the Richard Hurd era, Owen Paris
there.
Yet?
Yes, okay. I'm there. It's a glorious era.
I can imagine. How do you think... Because the thing is, we don't really see him interacting with Tom much, or at all at this point. Have you seen any interactions between the two?
Not really. He showed up more in Barclay episodes.
Right, right. Well, yeah. That's what I was going to ask. How do you think he is...
There was a little bit where he talked to him over subspace.
Oh, okay. That's yeah. what I wasn't sure is if you had like seen them talk to each other on subspace. Yes. I didn't want to spoil anything.
Yeah.
But, huge spoiler, I know. But what do you think it is about his interactions with non-Tom Paris characters? Like interacting with Barclay or Troy or...
It seems pretty great.
Yeah.
He was really nice towards Barclay.
Do you think it's like, if your son like is such a disgrace, like you could understand why Tom's just... ashamed?
I think Tom's a spoiled brat.
Okay.
I mean, and look, I'm sure his father, you know, he's said his father had pushed him to excel and all that, and it made him, you know, insecure and kind of a mess. And, you know, again, this kind of follows the trope of trying to follow in your father's footsteps.
Yeah.
But, Tom Paris is just someone who, when presented with, like, responsibilities, is going to do the exact opposite.
Okay.
Well, you know, that's why he's a bad boy.
Obviously. You can't have a Tom talk without some B'Elanna.
Yeah.
I forget the name of the episode featuring her father. It was one of the most boring episodes in the world. Is when she flashes back. Mm-hmm. Who's at fault here, Kyle?
Well, he did walk out on her and her mother. So.
Okay. Do you understand why she does have... Okay, we're introduced to her. She's far more mercurial at the beginning of the series.
Yeah.
She's dealing with that Klingon side of her. But how mercurial is the average Klingon, though? I think they're often very jolly folk.
Yeah, I would say so. She's very aloof a lot of the series, and I think it's because the writers were just bored writing for her. I mean, she did have like the episode Faces, where she's split into the two sides of herself. I think that's a good episode for her.
Yeah.
But most of her episodes are more like high concept things, like Prototype or the one where she has to stop the missile or whatever.
Oh, is that called Warhead?
Something like that. Yeah.
Okay. Well, it doesn't seem as if she's haunted by daddy issues, but she does have them, and that's what they're like. Okay, we need a B'Elanna episode. Let's talk about her dad.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, not the strongest showcase for B'Elanna.
Definitely not.
Okay. Whose fault is it for Seven of Nine's father getting assimilated?
Oh, that's his.
Yes.
That is very much his.
He's like, I know. There's an incredibly dangerous race of cybernetic beings. Let's go find them.
Yes.
I mean, I
get what they're trying to do. It's kind of a Dr. Jane Goodall type situation. We want to walk amongst the Borg.
Yeah.
But it turns out more like Grizzly Man.
Sure. Yeah. I get it. No, it turns out more like Congo. The Michael Crichton book.
Yeah, right. Although the movie is very different than the book.
The movie was awful.
The movie is, well, it ends amazingly.
With the gorilla fight?
Yeah, with like laser guns and like gorillas and volcanoes exploding. Oh, yeah. It's something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Diamonds. Okay, well, Seven of Nine, is she haunted by daddy issues?
I don't think so.
No.
She never seems particularly haunted. Like, because she even mentions, well, I know they're out there.
Yeah. Somewhere in the collective.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. She doesn't seem... I mean, she's a character like a Data, where there's a certain amount of detachment.
Yeah.
So, it's tough to say how much really torments her. She doesn't give the impression. Like, the show never hammers home a lot on her parents.
Yeah. What about Chakotay? He's got the dad who got him the tattoo.
Yes, and the father who was disappointed that his son went to Starfleet.
I'm shocked. Yeah. The father would be disappointed their son goes to Starfleet.
Well, he wanted him to be, you know, traditional and follow the ways of the rubber tree people.
I repeat, the rubber tree people. Go listen to our Star Trek Vegas story for the rubber tree people story that Robert Beltran said, and I think a woman of Aboriginal heritage was very offended when she went and asked him a question about about it. Anyway,
very offended.
It was awkward.
But yeah, Chakotay's relationship with his father, which doesn't a lot of it take place in that episode Tattoo?
Yeah.
Which is such a boring episode.
I think was that really the only episode where they really brought up his father?
So yeah, so far, unless there's another one showing up in season 7.
I don't think so.
I don't know. Then yeah.
Okay, well, Harry Kim, he has more mommy issues that are briefly addressed.
Yes.
But I don't really think we hear much about his dad.
No.
The doctor, there's Lewis Zimmerman.
Yeah, I think that there's something to that.
Yeah.
Because there is the issue where he has to go and try and save Zimmerman's life, and Zimmerman's a complete jerk to him the whole episode.
You're a Mark One.
Yeah, it's you know, again, it's sort of the opposite of the Data thing, where Data and Dr. Soong are friendly towards each other, and the doctor and Zimmerman are kind of like repelled by each other.
Yeah.
So I think it's a fun contrast. And it's actually a good episode too.
Yeah.
I don't know that, you know, when the two of them kind of make peace by the end that I was particularly warmed by it, but I think there's, you know,
what do you think of Dr. Zimmerman's physical transformation? Like, he looks completely different than the Zimmerman we met on Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, that really opened my eyes doing research for this episode and rewatching that episode of Deep Space Nine. I'm like, why the hell does Zimmerman look like, you know, Picardo of that era?
Yeah.
Versus like the Zimmerman of Voyager, who looks like the Picardo of like 2025.
No, he looks like the Picard of All Good Things.
Yes.
Old man Picard.
Yes.
Maybe it's so. Those health issues. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, okay, so he's got some daddy issues, but they weren't, you know, it wasn't the definition of his character at all.
No.
Leading up to that.
Yeah, the doctor never carried that with him.
Yeah.
Either way.
Neelix's entire family's obliterated.
Whose fault is that?
Yeah, whose fault? Yeah.
Yeah.
Kes, I'm sure her dad died quite young, because they only lived to 9. So there you go.
Yeah, so let's go to... Oh, and Janeway, of course. We have to talk about Janeway.
Another admiral as a dad?
Yes, yes. And we see the ghost, or the space ghost of him in the episode Coda.
That was... I really hated that episode myself.
It's not good.
No.
And her dad died under the polar ice cap of Tau Ceti Prime.
I think that's his fault.
You know, he was an admiral. How much of Janeway's journey is following in her father's footsteps?
Very much so, because we always get the sense that Starfleet is where the best and the brightest go to, and mm-hmm. so she's a smart woman, which we know she is.
Yeah,
she did that. But the thing is, by trade, she was always in the science division.
Yeah.
Do you think, and she kind of gave that up and pursued the command stripes instead? Do you think a lot of that was guided by her father's own, you know, career path?
Possibly.
She ends up as an admiral by the time we get to Nemesis.
Yeah.
So there you go. Mission succeeded.
I like that the show never really highlighted that, though. Like, it was never about Janeway following in her father's footsteps.
Yeah.
I think it would have been really, frankly, a really poor step for the writers to take, to have the first female captain and make her just trying to follow in her father's footsteps.
Yeah.
That would have been pretty bad.
Do we hear anything about her mother, though?
No.
I don't think so.
No, just the ancestor from 1159.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go.
So, yeah, I mean, going down the list, Janeway, whose fault was it? Well,
her father's.
For dying in the ice caps.
Yeah.
Chakotay, that's a tougher one.
Maybe shared, you know?
I don't even think, like, their issue is that strong.
No.
I think it's pretty resolvable.
Yeah.
So let's not blame either one of them.
I'm sure as soon as Chakotay got back from the Delta Quadrant, he and his dad hugged it out.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Although his dad died.
The ghost of his dad.
The ghost of his dad.
I forgot about that very important plot point. My apologies, listeners.
Tom Paris.
I think it's mostly Tom's fault.
Yeah, I feel the
same. I think it's 100% Tom's fault, let's be honest.
Owen Paris is a saint.
Yes. I'm going to tell Richard Hurd that when he's at his table in Vegas this summer.
I want you to do that.
I will.
He'll be the only person at the table.
Well, he'll also shoo me away. Remember when people were trying to get like free prizes from him that he was offering at his table and he was demanding that you buy autographs too?
Yes.
That was awkward.
It was very awkward.
Anyway.
So, B'Elanna.
I'd say the father walked out of the family.
Yeah, he's wrong.
Okay.
And then 7 of 9 again, the dad.
Yeah.
For, you know, putting the whole family in harm's way.
Okay.
He's an idiot.
Yes.
Quite frankly.
Yes, he is.
The show never really really punches that home, but yeah.
What did you think of the episode The Raven?
It was a good episode.
I liked it. I thought it was a very strong one.
I think it came a little too early in the run though for her run. I think
this is season 4, wasn't it?
Yeah. I think they should have held that one to maybe season 5, 6, somewhere in there.
Okay. Yeah.
Because there's other issues I think you could have dealt with 7 of 9 before really going to the origin story.
Sure.
So that was my take.
Okay.
Okay, so I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Send your thoughts and feedback to subspacetransmissionspod@gmail.com.
Yeah, you can also give us 5 stars on iTunes. It's a free podcast. This just helps us reach more listeners. And guys, please, we'll read out your reviews if you go send them. Also, coming up next week, we will be reviewing another two-parter, the last one of Season 7 before we get to the big, big finale, Gambit. Parts 1 and 2. Spoiler alert. I'm just going to say this. I really dig the design of the ship, the mercenary ship featured in Gambit. So,
way to sell the episode.
Okay. Anyway.
You can also reach us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam, V as in Varl Riker.
Wow. Smith. You can find me at Reportin. That's R. R as in rubber tree people. Reporton.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.